It wasn't just Andrew Benintendi today. It was JD Martinez, who has gotten hot.
That ball is gone! What a bullet by Devers!
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hello again. It's that time of week. Another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. Another week at home. Tom Karen here, Jerry Remy there. And Jerry, a happy anniversary, I guess. It was 2 months ago today that Major League Baseball shut down spring training. Feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, I remember just sitting down there that last day and it all of a sudden was done. And we've been home now for 2 months, as you said. And it feels like it's been like 9 months. I mean, we've been doing nothing, you know, sitting in a house. And I mean, it's just been incredible how long this is. It seems like it's been to this point. It really does. It seems like much longer than 2 months.
You know, I was looking at video of a game for some reason, but not on TV. I was on my computer and I called up something and it was just a shot of Fenway Park from the outfield. And I just found myself staring at it for like five minutes. I realized, you know, it was just, and it wasn't anything important. You and OB were just talking about what a gorgeous night. It was a game from last year. And it was just one of those picture perfect 7 in the evening, you know, light fading over Fenway. And it, you know, I keep thinking about the games and how I missed them. It was maybe the first time I thought about how much I missed Fenway Park on a crowded, warm night, how much I missed the energy of people around.
Well, you know, the other thing that got me this week too is when David Mellor did the outfield with the big heart for the nurses. And I thought that was spectacular. And, you know, you're looking down and it's a big empty ballpark that should be filled with people right now watching baseball. And, of course, it's not, you know, and it's really kind of sad to see. But, hey, it is what it is right now. And that's the world we're living in.
All right, let's get to the latest here. As we talk, the discussions are going on. The owners came up with a plan that they think would work. We know the players' union is going to have to weigh in, and I'm sure this thing is going to take some twists and turns before they can even get it. First, before we get into the players and what that's going to be, let's talk about the idea. We're hearing 80 games, give or take. I think 82 is the number that everybody is saying. You would only play teams in the American League East and the National League East. Right. Sounds like at least they would try to play the games at major league ballparks, so not isolated in the dome. DH for both leagues, that's a significant improvement. Sounds like maybe 30 players, give or take, per roster to help get through 2 to 3 weeks of training camp. Looking at those individual parts of it, what strikes you the most? What do you think about that?
I like the idea. I really do. I think it makes the most sense of anything that I've seen so far. I do question a little bit the amount of time that these players are going to need to get ready. Now, that's why they're going to have the expanded rosters, obviously. And the last thing I read, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but they're going to have a 30-man roster with a 20-man taxi squad. So, you know, they're going to need all of these guys, because if they're thinking about a 3-week spring training, that will probably be fine for the position players. A week to get in shape, 2 weeks to play games, or whatever kind of games they play, whether they be in a squad or against somebody else. For pitchers, it's not going to be enough, obviously. So what we're going to have is a league full of openers. That's what we're going to have to start with. And that's why you're going to have all these extra pitches. But the format of it, you know, playing, staying on the East, minimizing travel as much as possible, I think that all makes sense. And using the DH always makes sense to me. I like that better anyway. So, yeah, I like the idea, and I it's of all that has come out so far, the only bad thing I see for this is, like, apparently they can't play in Toronto, and Toronto would have to play down in Dunedin, which would be brutal in the middle of the summer, as we all know, down in Florida. I can't imagine how they would do that. They'd have to figure something out for that team. But, you know, it all sounds very reasonable to me, but as we all know, there are many more factors that go into it.
Yeah, and you bring up an important part about where they're going to play. So they're all saying that the hope and the plan is that they will play these games at the Major League ballpark, right? Like you said, Toronto's a problem because right now you can't fly into Canada. Right. You can't go to Canada without a 14-day quarantine, and you can't wait 14 days to play a game. But right now, and I know 2 months is a long ways away, 6 weeks, whatever it would be before July and before they would play games. But it's hard to imagine playing in downtown Boston right now. It's hard to imagine playing at Yankee Stadium right now, isn't it? And they say the fallback plan would be Florida. Go to the spring training homes. So some of that might not be decided till the very end.
Yeah, that I don't like at all. You know, if they got to be able to play in the ballparks, I'm all for that. I don't like the idea of going to play in spring training parks. I just don't think, you know, the quality of them aren't quite the same, obviously, as Major League Parks. The lighting's not as good, and they got to play a lot of night games, obviously. They got to play a lot of games. So I'm not for that part of it, but hopefully that won't happen. You know, Marty Walsh the other day closed down Boston basically for the whole summer, you know, with any kind of major events, the 4th of July and concerts and all that type of thing. So it's not looking good for people to get into Fenway anytime soon. But the ballpark could be, you know, sterilized and sanitized the way it's supposed to be. And you know, you could play there with no fans, obviously. But these are all things that are going to be coming up this week in an interesting form of fashion. Because I think there's going to be a lot of bitterness, and it's going to be like a war, I think, for the first, you know, week. And then hopefully they settle down and start to really negotiate this thing. But there's a lot left out there right now that I think from a player's point of view are not satisfactory, you know, to their demands.
They got to be careful here, don't they? Because baseball, as we know, has in the last few years kind of been a little slow to adapt, right? Young fans, we know the stories. They have trouble adapting to the game. And I think a lot of us would like to see the game make some changes, and it's been very slow to make those changes.
Right.
This thing breaks down, and I'm not saying either side would be at fault, but if this breaks down over money, this would be a really bad look considering what the country's going through.
You hit that right on the head. You know, I mean, what the rest of the country is going through it right now is something we haven't seen for years and years and years and years. And, you know, to have these guys bickering over millions and millions of dollars, it's not going to come off very well. But, you know, that's all part of it, unfortunately. And you know, I guess the biggest thing for me is not that side of it. And I agree with you 100%. If there's no baseball because of bickering between ownership and management and players, rather, it's going to be an awful look for baseball. Plus, when they've got next year, they've got a basic agreement they've got to come up with. How would they possibly be able to come to some kind of agreement then? You know, so this is a critical week, I think, for baseball. It really is. And I don't think it's going to go well at the beginning. But hopefully, as they throw ideas around, hopefully, you know, they get something. At least they have a framework to work in. And I don't think it's right there yet. I don't think they have enough, you know, but they've got a lot of things to discuss.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Negotiations are always best kept quiet because what you want to know is what the end result is, right? I want there to be an agreement so we can go watch baseball games or at least watch them on TV. And it's not going to be the players' union saying, okay, sounds good, let's do it. They're going to come back with a proposal. So we're going to see ups and downs. My guess is we're going to see each side look bad over the next few days as they hopefully inch closer to someone. You have been through work stoppages as a player. You've covered them as a broadcaster. The thing to remember is we've seen all our sports shut down even though both sides look bad. I mean, there's a point where the principle, you dig in. So just because it would be a bad look for baseball to not play doesn't mean this could go that way. I mean, this could go the way of work stoppages in the past where they say, no, we refuse to give into this because we think we're giving away too much of our protection.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm hearing more and more as we read about what some of the players are saying. Now, I don't know how big this is around all the players in baseball, but there are a lot of guys that are coming out publicly as we read these stories, and you see it on Twitter, and you see stories, obviously, in the columns that we read. A lot of these players are coming out because of safety right now. And that is my biggest concern, is that, you know, this virus does not have a vaccine, which is not going to have for about a year anyway. But the biggest thing is it has no treatment right now. And that is the scary part. You know, I looked down at Georgia yesterday where they had opened that state up and they, you know, I think moved too quickly. And now they've had a real spike in cases again come up. And those are the kind of things I think they're scaring a lot of players. And the old saying is, well, you know, they're young and they're strong and they're healthy. Well, you know what? this virus doesn't care what you are. I mean, these guys still get the flu, they get colds, you know, they can get this too. So that scares, I think the health issue is one that a lot of guys are really deep, digging deep into. And I think the management is going to have to prove to them, how can you possibly keep us safe? I think they all want to play, but I don't think they want to take that risk on, you know, getting it themselves or giving it to a member of their family or their parents or their grandparents or whatever it may be. And I think the league is going to have to prove to them, okay, if we can get this money thing straightened out, now you've got to tell us how we're going to be safe, because we're not immune from this. There's no way we're immune from this. So, you know, there's so much that's going to go on. I'd love to be a little birdie on the wall and listen to these negotiations. But these, to me, is the stronger negotiations right now is what I ever went through as a player when I was playing. And those were big-time negotiations, you know, dealing with free agency and stuff like this. But this is big time, you know, for this particular time and for the future of baseball, I believe.
There's no good. You were never a player's rep, right?
No, thank you. No, thank you. No. No, that was, you know, at that particular time, both sides were so far apart on so many things, and I didn't want any part of that. I was having enough trouble just being a player. You know, I didn't need that outside stuff. And most of that, I was a younger player at the time. Most of that, you know, went to the guys that had been around for a long time, that had greater knowledge of, you know, the union, obviously. And, of course, that was led by Marvin Miller. So, no, it wasn't my time to be one, and I never really wanted to be one anyway.
That was a period, too, where you guys at times were basically being asked to sort of sacrifice some of your pay. I mean, you guys weren't making millions of dollars playing baseball.
No.
And you were doing it on principle, but also to try to make the future better. Those had to be some pretty difficult discussions.
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, the way things were dealt with back in those days, if you'd have a player representative who was, you know, for the team and maybe an assistant. And they would do most of the information from, you know, Marvin Miller or from the owners. And it kind of trickled down to us. They would have meetings with us, you know, and a lot of times we weren't exactly sure what was going. There were times that I went out on strike or were locked out that I really didn't understand the reason why this was going on. But it was all for the, you know, the better good of the player moving forward. And, you know, so that's why we did things like that. But I don't think players were as formed in those days as they are today. I think today that it's a better organization as far as, you know, people being involved in it, where in the beginning of it, it was just seemed to be a few people that were taking responsibility for everything and then trickling down to the rest of the players. And you did whatever you were told. You know, you were not going to be a guy that they said, okay, we're going on strike tomorrow. You weren't going to be the guy who said, oh, no, I got to play because I need the money. No, you just did what they told you to do.
You know, it's different now because they're not in the middle of a season and while playing. But some of these negotiations can really distract players or become something that players have to deal with. I remember in 02, if you remember, when Tony Clark played for the Red Sox, he was the American League rep. So he was the league rep who would then talk to all the player reps on the individual teams. And if you remember, that was the August where the team almost – remember, were you on that? They were supposed to fly out to Cleveland, and everybody waited on the bus.
Yes,
to see if there
yes.
was a new deal made.
I remember that.
It was crazy. I always said, you know, they didn't make the playoffs that year, and they were a very good team, obviously, in 02. And I said part of the reason is I think Tony knew so much about what was going on behind the scenes, he would talk to his teammates, and those guys were convinced they were going to go on strike. Those guys were sending cars home. They were packing up stuff. And it's amazing how – in the middle of a negotiation, you can be convinced. That is why the one thing I will say to anybody who's paying attention over the next few days, don't overreact to news that comes out, because you're getting, you know, 50% of where it's only at the 20-yard line, the 30-yard line. They got a long way to go.
Right. There's no question about that. You know, I'm a horrible negotiator. You know, somebody says to me, okay, here it is. And I go, okay, great. Thank you very much. And let's go. You know, I would not be good at this game. And I don't have the patience, you know, for it. So I would, if it was me, I would prefer to say, leave me alone and let me know what we're going to do. That's what I want to know. If we're going to go play, let me know what we're going to play. If we're not, let me know that too. I don't want to be in the middle of this where it drives you. You can't sleep at night. You know, you're thinking about all the possible things that could possibly happen, good or bad. And what's tomorrow's meeting going to be like? We're going to propose this. And I mean, this week's going to be crazy. It's going to be really crazy. And we're going to have all kind of things going around in the media that, you know, you got to wake up one morning and say, oh, there will be baseball. And then you'll wake up the next morning and say, no, there's not. It's not going to be baseball this year. I mean, that's the way it's going to be. And I prefer to go to sleep through the whole thing. And somebody wake me up when it's time to do something.
Yeah, my wife's a professional negotiator. I've never won one in all our years of marriage, so
I'm not good at it at all.
No doubt about that. You know, it's funny, the Michael Jordan thing got into the baseball. Have you been watching this Michael Jordan?
Yeah,
it's been great, the last dance. And it's funny, I'd forgotten that when he played Double A, that was when they went to replacement players. And one of the reasons he refused to stick with it is that he wasn't going to cross the picket line.
Right. Well, you know, we had to do those games. Right. And I had just recently finished playing, and I was a member of the union. And we got these guys coming in to play, and I'm saying to myself, I can't do these games. So I ended up going to Nesson, and they said, oh, yo, you're doing these games, you know. So we went down, and it was the most silliest thing I've ever seen in my life. And these guys actually thought that they were in the big leagues for good. You know, and I'm watching them play, and I'm going, this is horrible. This is terrible baseball. And I got a funny story. We had a kid from Massachusetts, and I think his name might have been Mike Christo. Was it Christo, a pitcher? He was a local kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kennedy was the manager of the team. And, we were doing the game. It was a split squad game. They had him to pitch up in Clearwater. And we also had a game in Minnesota, which was right down the street, as you know. So I went to Kennedy. I said, look, the only reason we're going to Clearwater is to watch this local kid pitch in a game. Can you move him to Minnesota? He says, oh, sure, no problem. You know, so we had him start in Minnesota, so we didn't have to travel up to Clearwater to do the game. But it was crazy. And I remember staying at the same hotel as you know, the replacement players. And Scabs, I like to call them. And, you know, it was just – they actually thought they were there for good. And it was terrible baseball. The only good thing about it, they were like 2.5 hour games. Because they were so generous to the media. You know, they all wanted to be interviewed after the game. So it was really easy. But it was, we went to Fort Lauderdale for a Yankee Red Sox game of replacement players, right? So MSG, who was doing the games at that time, were pulling their crews out, because they weren't going to do the replacement games. We're moving in to do this game. And there was almost a fight in the game. Oh. It was unbelievable. And I'm going, all these Yankees and Red Sox, no matter who they are.
It's the uniform. It's the rivalry. You had said this before. When you were part of a work stoppage, when you came back mid-season, you had your training camp or spring training 2.0. Was at Fenway, right? You guys did all that in Boston?
Yeah, we did. We did that in Boston. And then I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think we played exhibition games, I think three of them. And I think all three were against Montreal. And I believe we played one here and went up there to play a couple. And that was it. That's all we played. I think, to the best of my recollection, that's all we played. And, you know, guys hate playing in squad games. They can't stand them, you know, because it just doesn't feel the same as playing against, you know, an opposing team. So, you know, if they can mix some of those in through this spring training that they're going to have, which is not going to be very long, you know, hopefully they can do something like that, play against some other teams instead of playing in a squad, because guys hate playing in a squad games.
But playing them at Fenway, holding training camp at Fenway, can they get – I mean, it's one diamond, right? The big drawback.
Yeah.
If you're down in Fort Myers, you got a half dozen diamonds to have everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're not going to have the volume of players that you had in spring training. You know, you go down here, what do you got, 80, 90 players
that are
dealing with it. But there is something to say about that. You know, you go to different fields, you get work done quicker, and, you know, you have infielders at this field, you have outfielders at another field, and you get out of the field for hitting. And so, you know, there is something to say about that. That's a decision that's going to have to be made. But I don't think anybody's anxious to go back to Florida at this time of year where it's 95 and humid every day. You know, I think they'd probably rather get up here and be settled. If they're only going to be here for 3 weeks, get settled into their home city and have their spring training at Fenway Park, if that's possible.
It's going to be so many small things that you can't even get your mind around. Like you mentioned before, I don't think there's going to be any minor leagues. So you're going to have a taxi squad of another 20 guys, give or take, who I guess stay here and play intra-squad games to try to stay in shape.
Yeah, that's what we don't know, you know, about yet. You know, I don't think they'll be traveling with the club because they want to keep the travel to a minimum of people. On, you know, it's probably going to basically be players, maybe you know, the coaches and managers, obviously, and maybe a couple of medical people, and that's it. You know, it's not going to be the traveling crew that you normally have on a flight. There's no way they can keep all those people from one another. It's impossible. And so I don't know what they would be doing with the extra 20. You know, they'd probably stay back in Boston and work out. And if one needed, they'd have to call them into wherever they might be, Tampa Bay or wherever it could, you know, wherever they are, and then add him to the roster. So I don't see them traveling 50 guys. I think the top would be 30 guys. And it's going to be the minimum. Whatever the minimum can be to travel, that's what it's going to be.
You wonder if maybe you keep that taxi squad in Florida, because then everybody else could have their taxi squads in Florida. Maybe you could play each other, but now you got to travel guys on the road to catch up with you.
That's a good point. You know, I didn't even think of that, but yeah, at least they'd be able to stay, play games and stay sharp down there. So
right.
Up here, they probably wouldn't be able to.
That might be the way it plays out. All right, a couple things I wanted to hit with you this week before we go on. One being, I began the show by saying a happy anniversary. But it wasn't just because it's been 2 months since we've seen any baseball. It's because on this date in 1979, you went 5-for-5 with a stolen base. Got to be one of the best nights of your career. And you barely remember it when I brought it up with you on the phone.
I still don't remember it. Look, I should have been in the Hall of Fame, right? Let's just have it. You know what? I'll tell you what. 5-for-5, that's a great night. And those are the kind of nights when you come home as a player where you can't sleep, because you're just so excited about the type of night that you had. And you kind of feel on those nights when you're 5-for-5 that if you got up 10 times, you'd have gone 10-for-10. That's the kind of feeling you have. And I also threw in a stolen base just for the heck of it. So that had to be one of the better nights I've ever had in my life. You know, so, you know, I forget those things. I you know, there's people ask me all the time, you know, do you have a favorite moment? Do you have this? I have trouble remembering yesterday. My head's going to mush, you know. So it's like, you went 5-for-5. That's great. I did that in the big leagues. I'm very proud of myself.
Well, were you a guy? I mean, we're all getting older. I don't remember stuff now that I used to remember. But as a player, like 5-10 years out of playing, did you remember a lot of nights? Did you, like, if I brought up you did this against this guy, would the memory come right back? Because I've noticed doing this, some guys, like, I'll tell you what, Eck has a memory for his nights. You tell him, hey, in you know, 79, you were on the mound against Cleveland. Oh, he'd be like, oh, yeah, I struck this guy out. Jim Rice, we had Jim on once, and we were talking about a 3-home-run night, and he didn't remember. Home? Was it? I mean, some guys do, some guys don't. Where did you feel?
I noticed that working with Eck, you know, because he'll bring up stuff from the past that, you know, I don't even remember. He'll bring up stuff from earlier in the year that I don't remember. Another guy like that is Jim Palmer. With the Orioles. I mean, he's got an incredible memory for a pitcher. He remembers every single pitch that he threw you, how many hits you had off him, where you hit the ball. It's incredible to listen to this guy. I mean, he knows everything. He doesn't forget a thing, you know, and I guess that's a knack to have. I wish I had that same knack, but I don't. Sometimes we do a game, you know, at Fenway, and the next morning I forget, you know, I read the paper and go, oh, yeah, that happened, you know. So that's, you know, people are different, but those guys that have those memories, I don't think I'd want to have them because I think they keep me up at night.
Yeah, you have to block out the bad stuff. When I used to do the Bruins, Rick Middleton, the great Bruin, he had a great line with me one night. He said, hey, don't ask me about the 80s. I don't remember them.
Yeah.
Just don't even ask about the 80s because I'm good on the 90s. I start remembering that stuff a little better. But it is amazing. Some guys, golfers I know tend to do that. Like you ask a golfer about a round, he'll go shot by shot what he did.
Yeah.
But some play, you know, it's weird. Some guys remember, some guys don't.
I wonder, you know, because my type of personality is one that I'm always looking forward to the next thing.
Right.
You know, so I finish a game and I'm thinking about the next game that I've got to do. And I was the exact same way as a player. You know, what you see for me now is what I really was as a player. And I kind of like, I'm always looking forward to the next thing. So maybe I'm the kind of guy that doesn't have a good memory from the past, you know, because of that. And maybe that's my type of personality. I don't know. But You know, there are very few. You know, I remember a game that I had against the Angels only because it was a former team of mine, where I think in that ball game I had like about four hits, and I think I stole three bases against them, or maybe four bases against them. And so I kind of remember that because that was a team that traded me away. But other than that, you know, I remember my first big league hit, of course, and things like that. But I don't have a great memory for things. I was always looking forward to the next thing. And I'm the same way now. And even in my job now, I just look forward to the next thing that's coming up.
So you go 5 for 5 in a night like that. And like you just said, you know, if you had a 10 at bat night on that night, you maybe go 10 for 10. Okay. That builds up over the course of the game. Right now, your third at bat, you're more confident. Your fourth at bat, you're getting more and more confident. You came out the next day. I'm looking right now. You went 1 for 4 in the next game. How quickly do you lose that confidence the next night if you go 0 for 1, 0 for 2?
Oh, you lose it immediately because, you know, every game's so different and you're facing a different pitcher and, you know, you just things break differently. It's like it's baseball. I've always said, you know, like if you had a night like 1 for 3, you slept well because that's 333. Beautiful. If you're 0 for 4, you couldn't sleep because you couldn't hit. If you were 4 for 4, you couldn't sleep because you were so excited. You know, the best nights to have were like 2 for 4. So you had a real good night. And 1 for 3 was okay, but any kind of 0 for was not a good night, and you had trouble sleeping. So it's little games that you guys play, and you know, with their own head and how they feel about different things. But I always felt the best way to get rid of those feelings was to come home and watch it away for about an hour and a half, and then get on with the next day.
By the way, you wrote a little. I'm looking right now. This is in May, so obviously we're in this date in 1979. You had a little hitting streak going here. Yeah, 10-game hitting streak going. You went, I'm looking here, over the 10-game hitting streak, you went 18 for 44, and you drove in 7 runs over 10 games. You had a nice little run going.
TC, I was a great May player. I, to this day, can't understand why I'm not in the Hall of Fame. I really can't. I just don't understand it. I can't. It just bothers me all the time.
We got to get the May Baseball Hall of Fame started.
So May Baseball Hall of Fame. Maybe I'd get a couple of votes.
MBHOF, Jerry Remy joining me now. And you know the last thing I want to ask you this week? Golf courses opened up, right? Last week in Massachusetts, they've been opening up the rest of New England already. I can't believe that you never golfed.
Well, no, I did golf.
Well, I know. You told me you played, what, once?
But not for long. I'll tell you what happened. When I finished playing, I used to golf a little bit when I was in high school.
Okay.
And I was okay. But when I finished playing baseball, I said, well, of course, I've got to play golf. Everybody else does. So I tried to join a country club in Weston. And then I got there, and I was being sponsored by Bobby Orr, as a matter of fact. And but then they came up and told me, well, you've got to have a cocktail party in your house. You've got to have this in your house so people can come and, you know, judge you. And that didn't go over well with me. And I said, oh, no, this is not going to happen. I'm not doing this for golf. Because I'm, you know, as you know, I'm a little bit of a private person.
Yeah.
And I didn't want people coming into my house to judge me whether I was okay to play at Weston Country Club. I didn't want any part of that. So I said, no. So what I ended up doing is I ended up playing with the cops and the fire guys who got to play, the firemen who got to play on free on like Mondays. So I started to play, but the problem is with golf is I never took lessons, you know, and it got to a point with me where I fought a lot of cheaters, and I played the game, yeah, which I didn't like. You know, they'd be in the woods, they'd be in the sand, they'd be in the water, and then when they got to the hole, they'd drop a putt, and they go, what'd you get, a 4? I said, 4? I said, you were 4 way back there.
You know, golfed with a lot of my friends.
Yeah, and I just couldn't get good enough to really enjoy it. So I ended up finally taking my clubs, throwing them in the water, and that's the last time that I played.
In the water. And I will say that, you know, like ex-golfer, and he's pretty good. He's better than me. But it drives him nuts. Like you guys who are athletes, you either have to be fully in and try to get as good as you can, or it just drives you. Like I'm perfectly happy being a lousy, hacking golfer.
Yeah.
It's good enough for me. But you guys can't do that. Yeah, you guys can't do that.
It was not good enough for me at all. And the mistake I made, I really should have, when I retired from baseball, got out of baseball, I really should have taken lessons. I really should have. Because I think I would have been a pretty good golfer, you know. I actually played right-handed. I hit left-handed, but I played right-handed golf. Huh. Maybe that's why I stunk, you know. I don't know. But I should have taken lessons to give that a shot. And then maybe it'd be something I'd still be enjoying to this day. But I just gave up on it quickly. It just made me so angry. And the cheating got to me. It bothered me, you know. It really bothered me.
Yeah, there's a lot of cheating. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, my God. For what? You know, for what?
Yeah, creative math. All right. Well, there we go. Another half hour flew by. Hopefully next week we've got good news. Talk about baseball. We'll try to find another 4 or 5 hit night for you to keep talking about your May.
Yeah, look for a 7 hit night. I think there's one of those.
Is that right? Oh, we're coming up. So. All right. We'll find that. Jerry, be well. Good talking to you, my friend.
All right. Take care, TC.
See you again next week. Jerry Remy with me. I'm Don Karen. That is the TC and Jerry podcast for another week. Stay safe.